Hello everyone, Pamela Zero here. Welcome to Duck Duck Goose, a podcast about the Visitor series. This episode starts in on book two of the Visitor series, Osei. Here's chapter one, along with a bit of original music. Osei, chapter one. Osei, Bunjar. Osei flexed his right hand slowly, trying to focus on something other than the person yelling at him. He looked down at the top of Last Kester's balding head as the tiny man waved his arms. They were standing in the courtyard outside the main entry gate to the Lucent's sanctuary. The neat stone tile floor held large urns filled with flowering bushes, and a small fountain danced in one corner. The sanctuary was not exactly a place known for shouting. Running his hand through his sandy hair, Osei took a deep breath and waited for Kester to stop yelling. "Las Kester, I understand that you want my notes," he said firmly. "However, I don't have my notes. They are back at the temple, along with the rest of my old belongings, the items you and the service refused to let me retrieve." Kester scoffed and shook his head. Osei closed his eyes for a moment and wished he was anywhere else. "You were the architect of my expulsion, Kester. It was your decision to deny me access to my things." He glanced over as a young couple paused nearby. They examined a plant's lush blossoms, seemingly oblivious to the two men arguing. "It's been a full cycle since then. 13 months of you badgering me for information I don't have." "You have no right to refuse to cooperate with us," Kester glared up at Osei. "I know you're lying. I demand your notes and all correspondence with the visitors immediately." Last Kester took a deep breath and smoothed the front of his bright gold robe. Shame twinged through Osei at his own simple black tunic and pants. He had once worn the jewel-toned robes of the service as well. He pushed his embarrassment away. "My notes were left on my data pad. The pad was left on the dining room table in my former quarters at the temple. Surely the service has checked my old rooms?" Osei heard a note of pleading creep into his voice and strengthened his tone. "We've gone over this before. Do we really have to run through the same discussion again?" "We will continue to seek you out until you tell the truth." Last Kester's voice increased in volume. "There is no data pad on your dining room table. There are no notes. Where are they? If you are unwilling to help us voluntarily, then we will take you in for questioning." Osei shrugged, exaggerating the movement a bit to make a point of his indifference. He had been taken in for questioning a few times. The service liked to haul him in and make him stay a week or so in a cell now and then. A small cell, since Osei was tall and lanky. Osei wasn't worried about being forced to reveal the few visitor secrets he had stumbled across. There were no tricks Last Kester could use to question him that Osei didn't already know. Last Kester softened his voice. "Osei, you know more about the visitors than anyone else. Surely with your knowledge, your extensive experience interacting with them, you have ideas about the best way to use the first visitor to fulfill the prophecy. Some small idea that perhaps would lead to the ritual succeeding? We have been trying for over a cycle now, but nothing is working." Keeping his face neutral, Osei held his tongue. Last Kester gave a sickly smile. "Don't you want the visitors to be safe and happy? Don't you think that everyone in the galaxy should pitch in to make the visitors feel at home? Even you?" Osei frowned. The man was a terrible negotiator. "Last Kester, there are billions of beings in this galaxy, millions of races and species, and all of them different. But there are only 129 visitors. They have been hounded ever since they were pulled forward from the past. I am sure that the last thing the visitors want is for me or anyone else in the galaxy to turn their attention to them. But everyone already has, Osei. Last Kester seemed to enjoy saying Osei's name without his old title of Last. Every time he did, Osei could feel his disgrace grind in deeper. Kester's eyes wandered around the flowers planted near the gate as if to seek inspiration. Listen, the visitors are well known, and it's to their benefit to get some media attention. He bounced on the balls of his feet as he expanded on his idea, the small fluffs of white hair on the sides of his head fluttering as he did so. Set up a meeting between the visitors and the service, and the visitors will reap the rewards of renewed galactic interest. Osei almost laughed at Last Kester's blatant shift in strategy. Yes, the visitors are well known. He paused for a moment to rein in his temper. You seem to be forgetting that they spent a cycle being hunted by the service. Yet you were a key participant in the service's hunt. Last Kester looked triumphant at finding a subject he could bludgeon Osei with. If I'm not mistaken, you spent, what, 12, 13 months tracking down the visitors? It took you over a cycle to bring in, what, 20 visitors? 30? How many public pleas did you broadcast? How many different strategies did you use to find them? Osei pressed his lips together. Last Kester was right. Osei had hunted the visitors and brought them to the service's temple on Kesu whenever he found them. At the time, he had thought he was doing the right thing. What Last Kester didn't understand now was that Osei was no longer that person. He was no longer that brutally focused man corralling people that had already been through hell. He had told himself back then that he was searching for the first visitor, but he had loved the job. In retrospect, all he was doing was adding to the visitor's stockpile of bewildering experiences in a strange new galaxy. Osei focused on the little man standing before him and did his best to think clearly. A lot had happened since the days of the hunt. Some of the visitors had forgiven him, and a few had even become friends. Last Kester, I acknowledge my participation in the hunt. At the time, I was doing what I thought was right. Now I am older and wiser, and once more, I am doing what I think is right, which is to leave the visitors alone so they can live their lives out in peace. We cannot leave them alone. The first visitor is the only person that can fulfill the prophecy. We have found her, but the bridge eludes us. Last Kester started yelling again. There are only 3 visitors at the temple. We need more. There are many different races of people in the service, but no species is even remotely like the Homo sapiens that came from the past. The young couple was now openly staring at the two men. Kester's voice dropped, and he hissed. Either you tell me where your notes are, or I will have you detained for questioning, or worse. Osei knew that worse meant he would be brought in for interrogation rather than questioning. He'd likely be tortured. He stood quietly, stomach churning, as Last Kester continued to threaten him. Fran, Thrid. Fran eyed the ground around her, scanning for the puffs of steam that meant escaping gas. Her mission was finding a site for the third dome. All she could think about was the fact that she was outside the first dome. The gristle had brought her to the edge of one of their pressurized tunnels, then collapsed the end of it behind her, sealing the tunnel. It had taken the gristle 3 weeks to tunnel the 14-kilometer distance between the dome and the possible new site. Fran had kept to the plan and dug her way up to the surface, climbing up to stand exactly where the map said she should be. She had volunteered for this, trained for this, and was suited up in special survival gear for this. It was still terrifying. All around her were huge gray-green boulders, towering over her like a giant stone maze. Fran kept an eye on the map projected onto the inside of her helmet as she navigated her way through the rocks. Eventually, she got to the edge of a large clearing. In the distance were the blue-green trees and vines of the Sualis jungle, an enormous swath of impenetrable plants. Between Fran and the jungle was a stretch of clear ground, made barren by some force of nature. Her job was to get as far into open space as she dared, do a few tests to find out why the ground was barren, and then get back to the tunnel area. The air around her was a sickly greenish color, and she was grateful for her survival suit. Fran put one foot in front of her and tested the ground. It felt solid. She took one step, then tested the next bit of soil with the other foot. She had forgotten about how dangerous outside was. Inside the dome, she had a regular house in a pleasant town with breathable air. Outside the dome, plants were sentient and predatory. There were carnivores with enormous heads filled with rows of fangs. The air was poisonous, the ground was riddled with gas vents that burst into flames, and the soil itself was barren to most crops. It had been over a cycle since they had arrived on the planet Thrid, certain that it was the best option out of several not-so-great choices. Like half the settlers on Thrid, Fran was a visitor. The visitors had been given the planet by the Galactic Council as compensation for being kidnapped, yanked forward in time, experimented on, and permanently changed. Fran still thought it was a bum deal. The visitors tried to make the best of it and had managed to form an alliance with the Grissel, a burly, furred race that spent most of their time underground. The Grissel agreed to build 3 domes on Thrid and terraform the planet in exchange for the visitors allowing some Grissel families to experiment with living in the domes. The Grissel were historically a wandering race, but they saw Thrid as a study in living in one place. The second dome was mostly built, and once they found a site for the third, the Grissel would be halfway done with their part of the bargain. Fran walked slowly forward, testing each step before she committed her weight. The ground was vibrating slightly, and it felt odd under her feet. She toggled her comm unit with her chin. "I'm picking up vibrations through my feet." "Okay, hold your position." Tess's voice came through calm and clear. She was back in the dome, watching via the small, hovering globe floating just a few feet away from Fran. Tess was a visitor as well, as were all the inhabitants of Dome 1 other than the Grissel. Tess ran the planetary reconnaissance team, mapping out the planet and determining what major infrastructure was placed where. Fran stood still and breathed as deliberately as she could. "Go ahead and toss out a shock disruptor," said Tess through the calm. Fran pulled a small canister off her belt, twisted the upper half around, and hurled it as far as she could into the clearing. The canister arced into the air and hit the ground about halfway into the open area. Fran crouched down, watching closely. She, like all of the visitors, had been changed by their captors, and now her eyesight was exceptional. The Thridians had done some serious experimenting with the humans they brought forward from Earth. One of the key changes that all the visitors endured was a skin suit. It was a thin layer that covered their skin and could be shifted around to cover different parts of their body at will, though it could never be completely removed. Fran's was blue and green, if she let her original colors show. Most of the time, she kept her skin suit black, a hard-earned skill she had learned in order to hide in the dark Thridian prison lab. Fran noticed now under her transparent gloves that her skin suit was shifting out of black and into green and blue. This was a lapse in discipline she hadn't experienced in a long time. Fran took a deep breath and focused her mind. Her skin suit went black. The shock disruptor had extended small support struts out onto the ground and was busy drilling a probe into the hard surface underneath. When it got about a meter down, it sent a shock wave through the subsurface soil, designed to either wake up whatever was there or destroy it. Fran felt the ground underneath her tremble as the shock wave passed under her. She stayed crouched, watching the cylinder closely. The soil around the disruptor started to shift slightly, and the vibrations under Fran's feet increased. She kept her eyes on the center of the clearing and stood up slowly. "Fran? We're picking up something on the orb. Something rather large is moving subsurface. Might be a good time to head back to the tunnel." Fran ran full tilt back the way she had come, leaping over anything in her path and keeping an eye on her map. Weaving through the boulders was more difficult while running, but she kept on her feet and got to the tunnel area just in time to see a gristle in a survival suit pop up out of the ground, his huge hands shoving dirt aside. It was Ural, the dig team lead. He drove back into the tunnel as soon as he saw Fran, and she slid the last few feet to the opening and dropped in past him. Dirt rained on her helmet as Ural sealed up the tunnel, and Fran felt her survival suit automatically unseal as the tunnel became pressurized. The two of them raced down the dim passageway. Fran updated Tess as she ran.
"Tess, damn sorry, I think I lost the globe.
I made it stay behind so we could see what happened. No worries.
You okay?"
"We're in the tunnel and heading east. No injuries."
"Keep moving."
"No kidding." Fran could hear a rumbling above her like rushing water. She spared a glance for Ural. Gristle were not designed to run with their huge arms and barrel chests. Fran slowed her pace and matched strides with Ural. He lifted his chin in a gristle sign of approval, and they ran on as the world above their tunnel roared.
Ose, Punjar. Ose watched as Las Kester strode out of the courtyard to his waiting flitter. The man was insufferable. The fountain was still burbling, the flowers still bursting with colors, but the day seemed dull, tarnished. With deliberate care, Ose sat down on a bench and waited for Sai, his life partner, to get off work. The two of them had been bonded for decades. Usually, Ose would meet Sai at his office inside the Lucent Sanctuary, but Kester's visit still rang around and through him, unheard echoes permeating the area. It was better to just sit still and breathe. A small bird peeped in a bush, and a butterfly wandered by. Gradually, Ose's breathing slowed. It unnerved him how easily he got upset these days. A few years ago, an argument with Kester would have been nothing. A brief delay before a meeting, a side note in his daily journal. Now just seeing someone in service robes set his pulse racing. He let his gaze float over the courtyard, now empty but for him and the lone butterfly. A smear of a blur near one of the bushes caught his eyes. He swallowed, hopeful. The blur resolved into a transparent figure, a woman, tall and blonde, her face stern.
"Elenin," whispered Ose.
He had been seeing this wraith for a few months now, along with the other visitors that he had grown to know and love during his last year in the service. He knew they were his overtaxed mind's version of a safety net, and completely unreal, an exterior illusion based on an interior fantasy. The ghostly Elenin moved forward until she was standing in front of Ose.
"You won't betray us, will you, Ose?"
"Never," breathed Ose.
"Good," said Elenin, "because if you do, it's not me that will suffer. It will be Duck, my daughter. She's only 6. Do you want her imprisoned? Experimented on?"
Ose stood up. "You know I'd never do anything that would harm Duck, or you, any of you."
His voice was loud in the empty courtyard.
Elenin nodded. She looked past him and held out her hand. It passed straight through him. He looked down at the ghostly arm disappearing into his chest and wished he could feel just a hint of its presence, a bit of cold air, or the slightest sensation of pressure. But there was nothing. Movement caught his eye and a small girl came from behind him, holding on to Elenin's hands. Duck. In real life, Duck had deep brown skin and black hair, but this version of her was a transparent, glowing blue.
"Uncle Ose, are you okay?"
Duck's voice was light, like the peeps of the birds in the bush.
"I think you need to have some noodles and take a nap."
Ose's face pinched together. Tears threatened to gather. The child was kind. After being yanked forward in time, imprisoned, tortured, hunted down by the service, Duck was still kind. Where had his own kindness gone? Ose kneeled down in front of the little girl.
"Thank you. I will do that. What do you think I should do about Lass Kester? Your mother is worried that I'll betray you and your family. Are you worried, too?
He could feel Elenin bristle above him.
She's a child, Ose. You don't ask such questions to a child.
Elenin's voice was firm. Ose stood up.
Doc is an honest child. I value her advice.
His face reddened.
Besides, the two of you are generated by my own brain. You might be the only way I can give myself decent counsel.
You should ask Auntie Fran, or I can ask her. I just think you should noodle and nap, said Duck.
One hand still held her mother's firmly. The other was making flapping motions, mimicking the butterfly.
Ose watched Duck's hands flutter, wondering what part of his mind had captured her so perfectly.
He didn't consider himself insane, though lately he'd spent more time in conversation with the people inside his head than he did with the real people around him. His abrupt expulsion from the service had nearly broken him. It seemed a small price to pay, having some people living in his mind, to keep his balance and ability to function.
"Kester's bluffing," said Elenin suddenly.
"He has neither the power nor the intention to interrogate you."
He smiled at her. She was right. Kester would have already brought him in if he had any real authority in the matter.
A voice rang through the courtyard, startling Ose. "My love, you're here! Why didn't you come to my office?"
Sai strode towards him, lean, confident, with deep black eyes and brown, wavy hair. His pattern shone on his tan skin, ice-blue jagged lines, interspersed with yellow spirals. Ose wrapped his arms around Sai as the ghost-like Elenin and Duck wafted away like blown smoke.
"Let's go home," said Sai.
Ose walked down the sandy pathway beside the lake. He had thought the trip home would divert Sai's attention from the latest visit from the service, but instead it had afforded his partner the chance to speak to him in private. Sai, being an intelligent man, did not let the opportunity go unused.
"You don't need to go."
Sai waited until they were out of earshot of the groundskeeper and then continued. "The visitors are happy on Thrid. They don't want you there. You've been told not to go. Don't go."
"Sai, I need to. We need to find the first. One of the visitors on Thrid is the first."
He turned down the path that led to the lake house.
Sai shook his head. "Ose, there are millions of planets in the galaxy, millions of different life forms. There are only 129 visitors. When they die, their race dies with them. Why don't you focus on any one of the myriad beings that actually might want you in their lives, rather than those that don't? Besides, the service has already found the first. She's at the temple in Hutlam, diligently going through whatever ritual the service has decided will fulfill the prophecy."
Ose shook his head. "You know as well as I do that that woman is not the first. She's part of a long con that's being played on the service, and once they figure it out, they'll need the real first."
Sai looked unconvinced. "And you think that if you show up with the correct first, then they'll let you back in the service? Do you really want to be part of all that again?"
Ose looked down at the ground.
"He did. By the faces, he did. It wasn't just the robes or the title. The service was woven through the fabric of the galaxy as ambassadors, advisors, and merchants. Being in the service meant having his finger on the pulse of the galaxy.
While it had originally been a mercantile organization, the service had grown and prospered, propelled by a set of rules they adhered to stringently. They never interfered with politics outside the service. They only took unwanted children, orphans, or volunteers to fill their ranks, and they offered the use of their technology at very reasonable prices. Anyone could join the service if they were willing to give up their former lives. The halls of their temples were filled with every type of being, most of which only knew life within the service. Ose had joined quite young, and his quest for power within its intricate political structure had spanned decades. Ose had not chosen to leave the service. He had been forced out, and Sai was right.
he did want back in.
Sai, I know that you're happy here on Punjar and that your work fulfills you.
I am not happy here. I'm not happy anywhere because I know what I need to do.
Sai stopped and looked out over the water.
I don't understand why you're so loyal to them. They'll never let you back in. If they ever did, it would be a ruse. You can't trust the service.
I don't want to get back in the service, lied Osei. I just need to find the first.
Why? Sai's face looked pained. You hate the service. You love the visitors. Why still search for the fulfillment of a prophecy that only the service cares about? Is this some kind of residual loyalty?
My loyalty is to you, my family, and the visitors, said Osei.
But if that prophecy does not get fulfilled, the impact on the galaxy will be profound. I have to find the first.
Because you believe the prophecy is true, said Sai. You think the galaxy will crumble if the first isn't found to do whatever magical thing the service expects from them?
Sai, the prophecy is not some mystical mumbo-jumbo, Osei tried to keep his voice level.
He had explained this to Sai before. It's a very specific set of instructions on how to repower the source. The source recharges at least a third of the power-generating machinery in the galaxy. If those machines lose their power source, huge swaths of our interplanetary economy will grind to a halt. It's not magic, it's science.
Osei gazed out over the lake and took a deep breath. I have to find the first.
How? How will you know who the first is, and if you do figure that out?
What will you do? Asked Sai. Run to the service and tell them?
No, Osei shook his head.
I know how they treat that woman that they think is the first. Endless experiments that are likely to end in her death. When we find the first, we'll need to hide her. Keep her safe and figure out a way to fulfill the prophecy without letting the service know she's been found.
Now I'm completely confused, said Sai. You want to find the first so you can save the service, but you don't trust the service enough to let them know they're being saved until after you save them?
Exactly. Sai, the problem is not the existence of the service. The problem is that the service leadership is filled with people who are willing to do anything to fulfill the prophecy, even if it means the death of the visitors. There must be a way to recharge the source without killing anyone.
Osei, I don't think you're thinking this all the way through. If you believe that the prophecy must be fulfilled and the service saved at all costs, then you need to accept that the first might be harmed in the process.
Osei blanched.
No, I cannot accept that.
Sai sighed inwardly. This was a familiar debate, and not one that he could win.
Very well. How can I help?
Well, the first four visitors that were pulled through are all on Thrid. One of them is the first. I need to find a way to get back onto that planet and into their daily lives.
That won't be easy. The visitors have been very clear. You're not welcome on Thrid.
Indeed, said Osei dryly.
I seem to be required in places I don't want to go, and banned from the one planet I'm dying to visit.
End of chapter 1.
Ghosts have somehow moved into my day.
Walk with me, Sarose.
They call their colors loudly, but I see only shades of gray. They whisper me castles, wash of me,
yeah.
I try to touch them, but I feel nothing there. Tell me once more your name. Are you here with something to sell? You're so good at your doctor's game. Wish I could play the patient as well. They say I'm crazy. Can you tell? Caught wheeling ghostly behind trails of night. They crisscross through my days, they slowly filter out the light. keep tapping gently the back of my mind.
And simple thoughts will become tears back.
Was a heart of mind. And in this world of twilight, you people seem so far away. And though I reach with all my might, I can't break through these layers of gray. I must move towards the morning. Don't remember the way.
Na 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 na
moving through darkness, no light to
wake up when the nightmare is over.
I finally feel a ghost slippery silver through my hands.
Can't say what you've done,
don't
can't
come
say
near
where
me,
you've
doctor,
been.
Now just
steel
let me be.
Voices, plastic hands.
I could have buried your
Piper has woken and
reached out and went through me
into.